This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
As-salatu was-salamu ala Rasulillah wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala thumma amma ba'd. Okay, now we're done with the designated places of Ihram. Now we will talk about Ihram itself, the state of Ihram itself. Imam Qudam rahimahullah said, Babul Ihram, the chapter on Ihram, he said, من أراد الإحرام استحب له أن يغتسل ويتنظف ويتطيب. It's recommended that one who wants to enter the state of Ihram to perform ghusl. Ghusl. Why to perform ghusl? Because the Prophet ﷺ performed ghusl as reported by Tirmidhi. And because when Asma' bint Umays delivered her son Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, the Prophet ﷺ asked her to make ghusl before her Ihram. Despite the fact that she was, you know, she was in her postpartum. But the Prophet ﷺ ordered her, even though she was a postpartum, during her postpartum period, to make ghusl before she made ihram. So to make ghusl, and that is recommended, not required. استحب له. It's recommended for him to make ghusl. ويتنظف. And to clean himself. Clean himself, what do they mean by clean himself? Basically, trim his mustache, to clip his nails, to do all of these things, and not fill ibit, and all of these things, to pluck the armpit, and all of that stuff. Just all why did they say this? There is nothing traceable to the Prophet ﷺ commanding this, but why did the scholars say this? Because it took them several weeks in a state of ihram. It took them a long time in a state of ihram. And you're not allowed to do any of that when you are in your state of ihram. So it would make sense that before you embark on this, that you clean yourself. Okay. Then he said, وَيَتَطَيِّمْ. He must abstain from wearing and apply perfume. And apply perfume. Apply perfume. Should he apply, where does he apply the perfume? You know, now you made your ghusl, and you're going to wear your ihram. Apply the perfume to your body only. Apply the perfume to your body only. And that is by agreement. They all allow you to apply your perfume to your body only. Can you apply perfume to your garment as well? It's controversial. But even the scholars who said that you can apply perfume to the garment, they said it is disliked. And there is some disagreement within the madhab, but it seems that the authorized view in the Hanbali madhab and the Shafi'i madhab is that it is allowed but disliked. In the Hanafi and Maliki madhab, it is not allowed. Why did they disagree over this? One, because Aisha said, كنت أطيب رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم لإحرامه قبل أن يحرم ولحله. وكأني أرى وبيص الطيب في مفارق شعره صلى الله عليه وسلم وهو محرم. I used to apply perfume to the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم, put perfume on the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم before his ihram and after his ihlal, exiting the state of ihram. I remember seeing the glittering, the glistening, the shine of the tib, of the perfume, in the parting of the hair of the Prophet ﷺ, It is not clear that this is applicable to the garment. The Hanafis and Malikis, they say that the Prophet ﷺ said, "La yalbas al-muhrim, la yalbas al-muhrim, what? Al-qamis, wala al-imama, wala al-burnus, wala al-sarawil, وَلَا ثَوْبًا مَسَّهُ وَرْسٌ أَوْ زَعْفَرَانٌ." A muhrim should not wear the qamis, which is the, whatever, the shtasha nowadays. It is the shirt, the long shirt, the long shirt. A muhrim should not wear the long shirt, should not wear imama, should not wear the burnus, which is the hooded, the Moroccan thing, the hooded shirt or robe, and should not wear pants. And the muhrim should not wear a garment that has been touched by wars, turmeric, or za'faran, saffron. So the Hanafis and Malikis say that the Prophet said that she should not. And they also said that in Al-Ja'rana, in Umrat Al-Ja'rana, which was in the year 8 after Hijrah, a man came to the Prophet ﷺ and told them that I put on perfume, and he, you know, had the perfume on his garment. The Prophet ordered him to take off his garment and wash off the perfume. The Shafi'is and Hanbalis, they say that this was in the year 8 after Hijrah, and what Aisha is talking about is in the year 10 after Hijrah, it abrogated it. But the Hanafis and Malikis, they say that there is no need to say abrogation here, because the other one, the first one belongs to the body and one belongs to the garment. Even the Shafi'is and Hanbalis, they say it is disliked to put it on the garment. Just remember, don't put perfume on your garment. Put perfume on your body. But that is the disagreement between them about the garment. Keep in mind, all of them will say that this is all before ihram. Once you start your state of ihram, no perfume to your body, to your garment, to anything. The Hanbalis go as far as saying that you will be liable if you smell the perfume intentionally. Like if you do this, you'll have to offer a sacrifice. Really? Okay. So now this is clear. But put on perfume on your body before, after your ghusl, and before you start your ihram. Then he said, وَيَتَجَرَّدْ عَنِ الْمَخِيطِ فِي إِزَارٍ وَرِدَاءٍ أَبْيَضَيْنِ نَظِيفَيْنِ ثُمَّ يُصَلِّي رَكْعَتَيْنِ وَيُحْرِمْ عَقِبَيْهِمَا وَهُوَ أَنْ يَنْوِيَ الْإِحْرَامِ. He must abstain from wearing fitted sewn clothes. He should wear an izar, which is the unsewn lower garment, and a rida, which is the unsewn upper garment, both of which are white and clean. Then he should pray two rak'ahs and enter the state of ihram immediately after them by making the intention of the state of ihram. So now you washed, you cleaned yourself, you put on perfume. Now he's telling you, take off the clothes, everything that is makhit. Makhit means sewn. Does this mean stitches? No, it means form fitting, fitted. Meaning what? That you could basically, your sweatshirt, if you take your sweatshirt and put it on your shoulders, is that okay? Yes, it is okay. Because you're not wearing it like you would wear a sweatshirt. You're just laying it there. If you put your aba'a, which is, you know, the usual, that thing that they wear, huh? Yeah, the cloak. If you wear that cloak on your shoulders like this, is that okay? No, it's not okay. Because it is meant to be put like this. So you can't put it like this. It is meant to be worn like this. People wear this aba'a even without sticking their hands into the sleeves. Well, it doesn't have sleeves, it just has that thing, you know, that opening. Even if you don't stick your hand outside of the opening, just putting this aba'a like this, people, you would not look like someone who's muhram. Because people outside of their state of ihram, they wear the aba'a like this. And sometimes they don't stick their hands outside of the openings. Okay? So you can't do that. Huh? If you take that aba'a and not wear it like this, but just throw it on your shoulders, that aba'a, you throw it on your shoulders, not wearing it like people usually wear the aba'a, that is fine. So the idea here is form fitting. You don't wear anything that is sewn for your organs, for your limbs, has sleeves. And so a shirt that doesn't have stitches is still not allowable. Sometimes they make shirts without stitches, right? Nowadays, they come out of the factory. There are no seams, there are no stitches, there is nothing. You know, it's just fitted like that. That is not allowable. Whereas a rida, like a lower garment that has stitches all over the place, that is allowable because it is not form-fitted. It's not form-fitted. You wrap it around you. You don't wear it like trousers, like shirts, and so on. Is that clear? So that is the idea of the form-fitting stuff. Keep in mind that they allowed, the majority allowed you to wear the pouch that has your money. That is allowable by the majority, to wear the pouch that has your money. In the Hanbali method, they're very strict with bills. They don't like bills. The only time where they allow bills is when, that is the only way to keep your awra covered. If your izar will not stay still, you can wear a belt in this case. Or you could wear like a rope or something and make a knot. Only if that's the only way to cover your awra. But they tell you, take your imama and wrap it around your izar. If you want to keep your izar in place, wrap the imama around your izar, tuck one end of the imama into the other end of the imama, but do not make a knot. No knot. Tuck it. And you could tuck it several times. So you get your imama, wrap it, tuck, 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 tuck. Tuck it. But you don't make a knot. Okay. No, in the Hanbali method, they don't allow safety pins either. So it's just that you will have to... But keep in mind, they will allow you the pouch that has... they will allow al-himyan and al-mintaqa. They allow to keep your possessions, to keep your belongings, to keep your money. They will allow you the waist pouch. Wear the waist pouch. And that waist pouch, you could wear it where you keep your money on top of your izar, and that will hold your izar in place. That will hold your izar in place. They allow the waist pouch to keep your money. Because Aisha said, أوثق عليك نقودك. You know, tie your positions or your money around your waist. The waist pouch... Whatever the waist pouch, whatever secures the waist pouch, whether it is the sort of the click-in stuff or the knot, whatever secures the waist pouch. Yes. Okay. So now that you will take off the sewn stuff and you will wear this, you will wear the izar and rida. Izar and rida are not required. They are recommended. What is forbidden is the Prophet did not say what you have to wear. He said, لِيُحْرِمْ أَحَدُكُمْ فِي إِزَارٍ وَرِدَاءٍ عَلَيْهِ. One of you should make ihram in izar, rida, and sandals. But that command is for recommendation by all the scholars, not obligation. What is prohibited is that there are certain articles of clothes that are prohibited and anything like them that is sewn to fit your form. But then you could just wear anything. You could get your aba'ah, and wrap it around your, get your aba'ah, and wrap it around your lower garment. That would be allowable. It is not like you have to wear, like you have to purchase particular items of clothes. It is just that you don't wear any form-fitting. So if someone is poor, and they have a aba'ah, and they have a qamis, a long shirt, and they have a aba'ah, what do? We tell them, get your aba'ah, wrap it around your lower garment, get your qamis, throw it on your shoulders. Throw it, not wear it. Throw it on your shoulders. That's it. And then you're fine. If they don't have, they have pants and they don't have anything else, and they can't buy anything else and they're poor, the Prophet ﷺ said, they can wear their pants. فَمَنْ لَمْ يَجِدْ فَلْيَلْبَسِ السَّرَوِيلِ فَلَمْ يَجِدْ الْإِزَارِ فَلْيَلْبَسِ السَّرَوِيلِ. Whoever does not find the izar, let him wear pants. If that is what he can find. He said the same thing about فَمَنْ لَمْ يَجِدُ الْخُفْ فَلْيَلْبَسْ فلما يجد نعلين فليلبس الخفين وليقطعهما أسفل من الكعبين. Whoever does not find sandals, he can wear khufs, but he should cut them below the ankles. That is, cut them below the ankles according to the majority. The Hanbalis will say that he should not cut them below the ankles. We'll discuss this later, next time, inshallah. We will see why the Hanbalis said he should not cut them, because it's a waste of money, and the Prophet ﷺ did say this in Hajjat al-Wada', repeated this. Ibn Abbas's report does not have cut them before below the ankles, and all of that stuff. But in general, if you don't find, that is what you look for, and that is what's recommended. If you don't find, then you wear what you can find. Should they be white? No, they should not be white. Why did they recommend them to be white? Because the Prophet ﷺ said, "Albasu min thiyabikum al-bayad wa kaffinu fiha mawtakum fa innaha khayru thiyabikum." Wear white garments and shroud your dead in white garments. For white garments are the best of your garments. White garments are the best of your garments. So the Prophet recommended the white color. However, if someone, but don't start it. If someone decided to buy purple rida and izar, or pink, you know, as they are responsible for their own safety. But that's really purely halal. That's absolutely fine. Anyway. ثم يصلي ركعتين. And then after you put on your garment, then you pray two rak'ahs. Pray two rak'ahs. Because the Prophet ﷺ said, أتاني آت من ربي الليلة وقال صلي في هذا الوادي المبارك وقل عمرة في حج. The Prophet ﷺ said, like a messenger came to me from my Lord and said to me, pray in this blessed valley, which is Wadi al-Aqiq, and say Umrah fi Hajjah, and say, you know, I intend to do Umrah al-Hajjah. From this hadith, we deduce two things, that you will pray, and that you will speak of your intention. That you will pray, and that you will speak of your intention, which is al-Ihlal, to speak of the intention of Hajj, or Umrah. And then he said, okay, وَيَسْتَحَبُّ أَنْ يَنْتِقَ بِمَا أَحْرَمَ بِهِ وَيَشْتَرِطَ وَيَقُولَ اللَّهُمَّ إِنِّي أُرِيدُ النُّسُكَ الْفُلَانِيِّ فَإِنْ حَبَسَنِي حَابِسْ فَمَحِلِّي حَيْثُ حَبَسْتَنِي. It is recommended that he speaks of his intention of ihram, makes a condition by saying, O Allah, I intended this particular ritual or rite, Umrah or Hajj. So if something prevents me from completing it, then the place of the termination of my ihram is where you made me unable to proceed, is where you stopped me. You made me unable to proceed. Why do they recommend this? Because when Duba'a bint Zubayr, the cousin of the Prophet ﷺ, came to him and she said, I'm afraid that I may not be able to complete because I'm not feeling well, and I'm afraid that I'm not able to, but I want to make hajj with you. He said, make ihram washtariti, and make a condition. Say this, you know, to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I intend to make this, but if you prevent me from proceeding, then my place of exiting the ihram is wherever you prevent me. Otherwise, there will be consequences. If you don't make that condition, and if you were prevented from proceeding because of whatever, hadugu, or, you know, they disagree over sickness, but you did not get the visa, or they stopped you, they took you to jail, something happened, etc., then you will be considered a muhsar. And a muhsar, there are rulings for the muhsar that we will discuss later, inshallah. If you make that exception when you make your ihram, then you're fine. Whenever you stop, you stop. Whenever you are stopped, whenever you are prevented from proceeding, that's fine. Keep in mind, by all four mazahib, once you embark on Hajj and Umrah, you must complete them. Hanafis and Malikis, they apply this all across the board. Any act of worship, whether it is fard or nafl, you start it, you complete it. Shafi'is and Hanbalis, they say that if you start an act of worship that is voluntary, it is up to you to complete it or not. Except Hajj and Umrah. All four of them agree that when you start Hajj and Umrah, you must complete them. Okay. Now, some people say, you know, if I, you know, I'm, you know, I'm, I don't mind. Even if Ihsar, I don't mind the sacrifice. I don't need to make that condition. It was not reported that the Prophet ﷺ himself or the rest of the Sahaba made that condition. He prescribed it for Duba'a bint Zubayr. Anyway, in the Hanbali madhab, they recommend it so that they alleviate you from the hardship, avert the hardship of Ihsar, and so on. If you want it, that's fine. If you don't want to make it, it is not required. Then he said, وهو مخير بين التمتع والإفراد والقران وأفضلها التمتع ثم الإفراد ثم القران. He is given the choice of تمتع, إفراد, or قران, which are described below. The best is تمتع. Okay, we have three different forms of Hajj and Umrah. Tamattu' is when you make, Ifrad is easy. Ifrad is to single out the Hajj. So you're going just to make Hajj, that's it. No Umrah, just make Hajj, Ifrad. From Fard, to single out. Qiran is to combine. Qiran is to combine. So we can translate Ifrad as Hajj only. Qiran is combined. Tamattu' is what? You want to say combined, but no, but it would be just like Qiran. Tamattu' is called the Umrah, then Hajj. Umrah, then Hajj. So you will finish your Umrah, you will exit your state of Ihram, you will start your Hajj on the 8th day of the Hajj. That is tamattu. Qiran is when you come in with one Ihram, you do not exit from the state of Ihram, one Ihram, you're doing Hajj and Umrah combined. And you know, particularly in the Hanbali Mazhab, there is nothing more than ifrad that you will do. When you do Qiran, it's like you're doing ifrad, but you intend when you make your tawaf and you make your sa'i that this will be for your hajj and umrah. Your tawaf and sa'i will be for your hajj and umrah. So it's clear, hajj only, combined hajj and umrah, Qiran, tamattu. All four mazahib agree on what? That this is okay, this is okay, this is okay. They agree on the validity of all three forms. They agree on the validity of all three forms. But they disagree on preference. Which one is preferred? So who said Ifrad is preferred? That is the Malikis and the Shafi'is. Who said Qiran is preferred? That is the Hanafis. Who said Tamattu' is preferred? That is Hanbalis. So Hanbalis are saying that Tamattu' is preferred. Why are the Hanbalis saying Tamattu' is preferred? Because they have a hadith reported by Bukhari and Muslim from Jabir radiallahu anhu, where the Prophet when the Prophet went with the Sahaba, he said to them, أَحِلُّ مِنْ إِحْرَامِكُمْ فَطُوفُوا بِالْبَيْتِ وَبَيْنَ الصَّفَ وَالْمَرْوَى ثُمَّ أَقِيمُوا حَلَالًا حَتَّى تُهِلُّوا بِالْحَجِّ, etc. So he said to them, now you came with the intention of making Hajj, make Umrah and make Tawaf and Sa'i and exit your state of Ihram and stay in Mecca relaxed and so on until the 8th day of the Hijjah and then make another Ihram for Hajj. وَاجْعَلُوا الَّتِي جِئْتُمْ بِهَا مُتْعَى, and make the one that you came with a Umrah, after which you enjoy your being just not in a state of Ihram in Mecca. And the Sahaba said, how could we do this? The Prophet said, do as I command you. Had I not brought the hadi with me, the sacrifice with me, I would have done the same thing. So the Hanbalis say that this is clearly the preferred one because the Prophet would not have ordered them to do except that which is preferred. You know, the Hanafis say that the Quran was the way the Prophet himself made Hajj and Umrah, so that must be preferred. The Malikis and Shafi'is said clearly, if you single out each one of them with a trip, that is preferred. So if you devote a whole trip for Hajj, and then you devote a whole trip for Umrah, that is preferred. But that is a discussion of preference, not validity. According to all scholars, any form is valid, whether you make tamattu, ifrad, or qiran. The difference between tamattu, ifrad, and qiran, you have the picture, right? You have the picture in your books, right? Yes. Yes. Qiran would absolve them of, not absolve them, Qiran would account for them, exempt them from the obligation of umrah. You have the picture in your book? Okay. What is the difference between ifrad and qiran? The only difference between ifrad and qiran, according to the Hanbali Madhab, is that people who make qiran will sacrifice. People who make ifrad will not sacrifice. Everybody is coming in to Mecca. You came in on the 5th of the Hijjah. Everybody is coming into Mecca now. You know, on the 5th of the Hijjah, everybody comes in. Okay? And they make tawaf. Whether you are ifrad, qiran, tamattu. Everybody comes in and makes tawaf. Plus, okay, plus or minus sa'i. Right? Because you could defer sa'i. But everybody is coming in to make tawaf. This is called tawaf what? Al-Qudum, tawaf of arrival. And everybody is doing this, but this is not the pillar tawaf. This is just the tawaf of arrival. The pillar tawaf is tawaf al-ifada that is done on the 10th, 11th, 12th, or 13th. And we said that Imam Malik said up to the end of the Hajjah. But it is done on the 10th, 11th, 12th, or 13th. Okay? That's tawaf al-ifada. But everybody is doing this, right? So the people who are doing ifrad and the people who are doing qiran, for them, they started one ihram. Only the people who will do tamattu after they do tawaf al-qudum, after they come and do tawaf al-qudum, those people who are doing, okay, no, the people who are doing tamattu, after those people will finish their whole umrah. They'll finish their whole umrah and exit from their umrah. Here, they will exit. Those people with ifrad and qiran, they will not exit from their state of ihram. They continue from the 5th to the 8th. They wear the same clothes. They apply the same rules. They are in ihram. Comes the 8th, and everybody does the same thing on the 8th. Everybody does the same thing from here until the 10th, right? And the only thing that will be different on the 10th is that the people who made ifrad, they will not have to sacrifice. There is no sacrifice for them. So what is required of them on the 10th is rami, halq, and tawaf. Stoning, shaving, tawaf. For the people who made tamattu or qiran, they will be required to offer a sacrifice. They will be required to offer a sacrifice. Afterwards, now tawaf al-ifada here, this is the main tawaf. Tawaf ifada is the main tawaf. It doesn't have to be afterwards, because you could make tawaf al-ifada before any, you could change the order. On that day, the Prophet ﷺ showed a lot of flexibility on that day, could change the order. But the way that it was done by the Prophet ﷺ is that they did the rami and halq, and zabh and halq first, and then they made tawaf al-ifada. They made the first tahallul before tawaf al-ifada, which is basically, you could make tawaf al-ifada in your regular garments, because you come out from your state of ihram. the only thing that is left is sexual relations. That is left until after Tawaf al-Ifada. But you could do Tawaf al-Ifada first. And two out of three, so two out of three things. We have stoning, we have halq, shaving, and we have Tawaf, which is Tawaf al-Ifada. Two out of these three will get you out of the state of ihram partially. And when you do the third one, you get out of the state of ihram completely. That is why the rest of your days, you know, of Rami al-Jamarat, you will not be in a state of ihram at all if you did your Tawaf al-Ifada already, if you did the three, stoning, shaving, and Tawaf al-Ifada. So ويستحبوا, okay. So is this clear? Are there any questions here about the different types? You know, Quran. Yes.
So you can go to Tawaf and then you can shave and then you can go to the stoning, and that's okay?
Yes, you could go to Tawaf, shave, and then do the shave. Do the stoning, do Tawaf. Do the stoning, shave, do the any order. The issue here is you need two out of three to come out of your state of ihram partially so that you could wear whatever you want and put perfume and do all of that stuff. And you need to do the third one so that you could resume sexual relations with the spouse. Now, ولو أحرم بالحج ثم أدخل عليه العمرة لم ينعقد إحرامه. He said, if one makes ihram for Hajj and then adds umrah to it, his ihram does not become valid for the umrah. His ihram does not become valid for the umrah. If you make umrah, and then you want to add Hajj to it, can you do this? Add Hajj to Umrah? You went to and made Umrah in, you know, Dhul Qadah. Can you add Hajj to your Umrah? Yes. If that is before the Tawaf, before you finish the Tawaf of the Umrah, you could add Hajj to it. Between the Tawaf and Halq, between the Tawaf and Halq, can you add Hajj to it? According to Imam Malik, yes. And a position in the Hanbali Madhab, but the majority said no. Once you finish the Tawaf of Umrah, you cannot add Hajj to it. What are we saying here? You cannot add Hajj in the sense that you cannot do Qiran. You cannot combine. But if you go and make Umrah and exit from your state of Ihram and then make Hajj thereafter, that is tamattu. But I'm saying, تدخل الحج عليها, to add Hajj to it, to combine, to do Qiran. Is that clear? If you had not finished your Tawaf yet, you could make Qiran. You could make Qiran, according to the majority. If you finished your Tawaf, but you did not make Halq, only the Imam Malik will allow you to add Hajj now. Can you do the opposite? You came in with Hajj Ifrad. You came in just to make Hajj. Can you add Umrah to it? No, you can't add Umrah to Hajj. You can add Hajj to Umrah. You cannot add Umrah to Hajj. Except that some of the scholars did say that you could add, but the majority, the vast majority, said you cannot add Umrah to Hajj. And that is the four mazahib said they can't add Umrah to Hajj, but there is this agreement within, you know, even within the Shafi'i mazahib, there is this agreement. But what about what the Prophet ﷺ did with the Sahaba? They came with Ifrad and he told them, make Umrah. they added Umrah to their Hajj. That is after they made their ihram of Umrah. No, but these were coming with the intention of Hajj, not Umrah. So the people who come for Umrah and they will exit and they will go into Hajj, that's fine. But these people are coming with the intention of Hajj. They are in a state of ihram for Hajj. They must stay in a state of ihram until they finish their Hajj. Can the Prophet told them to add Umrah to it and make the Maktu'ah? That was the understanding of Imam Ahmad, that this is considered fasakh al-hajj ila al-umrah. This is not adding umrah to hajj. This is fasakh, which is voiding the hajj to add umrah to it. That is why Imam Ahmad used to say that someone who comes in with the intention of, he made ihram for hajj, but that is a peculiar Hanbali position. Someone who made ihram for hajj, they can come out of their hajj, of their ihram, make it a umrah, like the Prophet said in the hadith that was reported to Jabir, said to the Sahaba, you came out with the ihram of hajj, now make the tawaf, exit from your ihram, and stay halal in Mecca until the day of Tarwiyah, and then start the ihram for your hajj on the day of Tarwiyah. Imam Ahmad applies this not only for the Sahaba, for anyone. It is a general rule for Imam Ahmad that this is fasakh. That is why they used to sometimes tease him about it. Salama ibn Shabib said, "Kullu shay'in minka jamil illa qawlaka fi fasakh al-hajj." Everything about you is beautiful except what you said about fasakh al-hajj, that you void al-hajj into umrah. Imam Ahmad said to him, "Kuntu azunnu anna laka aqla." I used to think that you have a brain. And then he said to him, they must be friends. So he said to him, "I have 18 traceable, authentic hadith to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam fi fasakh al-hajj ila al-umrah. Atrukuha liqawlik." I have 18 authentic, traceable hadiths of the Prophet pertaining the voiding of Hajj into Umrah. Should I leave them all for your position or for your opinion? Anyway.
What if they came without the headphones?
Huh?
They was making the Hajj, they brought it, they won't require the headphones. So what if they changed it now to Umrah and Hajj? Now they didn't bring the headphones.
Yes. If they did not bring the hadji, they make the fasakh into umrah. If they brought the hadji with them, they can't make the fasakh because they brought the hadji with them. So they can't come out of their state of ihram until al hadji yablugha mahill. Yes? Yeah, but if you do it, then you will have the offering of tamattu. You will be required to do the offering of tamattu. Then the final thing here, he says, فَإِذَا اسْتَوَى عَلَى رَحِلَتِهِ لَبَّ فَيَقُولُ لَبَّيْكَ اللَّهُمَّ لَبَّيْكَ. And I know that this is a little bit too dry and too sort of confusing. Inshallah, next time will be a little bit easier because we will talk about the mahzurat al-ihram, the forbidden things in ihram. And, you know, the following time will be much easier because we will talk about the description of Hajj. And we will do it with a PowerPoint, inshallah, when we have pictures and stuff. Because I know it's getting a little too hard. فإذا استوى على راحلته لب فيقول لبيك اللهم لبيك لبيك لا شريك لك لبيك إن الحمد والنعمة لك والملك لا شريك لك. Okay. So now that he made his ghusl, cleaned himself, put on perfume, took off his garments, put on the Hajj garments, prayed two rak'ahs, made the intention of Hajj, designated the particular nusuk that he's about to embark on, then فإذا استوارة, once he is upon his mount, because that's what the Prophet ﷺ did, he started the talbiyah once he mounted his rahila, or his mount. He makes the talbiyah by saying, here I am, O Allah, responding to your call. Here I am, O Allah, responding to your call. Here I am. Verily all praise. Here I am. You have no partner. Here I am, responding to your call. Verily all praise and blessings are yours, as well as all sovereignty. You have no partner. You have no partner. La sharika lak. Because that is what the Prophet ﷺ used to say. It's reported by Bukhari Muslim from Abdullah ibn Umar. وَيُسْتَحَبِّ الْإِكْثَارِ مِنْهَا وَرَفْعُ الصَّوْتِ بِهَا لِغَيْرِ النِّسَاءِ. It's recommended to do it talbiyah frequently and to raise the voice while saying it for men only. Because the Prophet ﷺ said, أَتَانِي جِبْرِيلُ فَأَمَرَنِي أَنْ أَمُرَ أَصْحَابِي بِرَفْعِ الصَّوْتِ فِي الْإِهْلَالِ وَالتَّلْبِيَةِ. Jibreel came to me and commanded me to command my companions to raise their voice in takbir and ihlal. Ihlal is to speak of the intention of hajj and umrah, labbaik allahumma umrah, labbaik allahumma hajj. That is ihlal. Talbiyah is to say labbaik allahumma labbaik labbaik, to raise your voice with it. Except for women, because modesty is a priority for women. But women say it to hear each other. So she will make her neighbor hear her, not the sort of the next bus, you know, just the neighbor, one on each side. They'll hear her, not only for herself, they'll say it high enough to hear them. وهي أكد فيما إذا على نشزا أو هبط واديا أو سمع ملبيا أو فعل محظورا ناسيا أو لقي راكبا وفي أدبار الصلاة المكتوبة بالأسحار وإقبال الليل والنهار. It is more emphasized when they go up a hill or down into a valley, or they hear someone saying it, or they do something out of forgetfulness that is unlawful during Ihram, or they meet a group on their mounts, and at the time after the mandatory prayers, and at the time before dawn, and at the time of the approach of the night and day. Okay, the ruling of talbiyah, labbaik allahumma labbaik, the Hanafis would require it once. It has to be, you have to say labbaik allahumma labbaik. If you don't say labbaik allahumma labbaik, they have two positions. One position is that it is mandatory, and the other position is that it's a pillar. That's a huge, a big deal. Yeah. The Malikis say it's only mandatory. The Hanbalis and Shafi'is, they say it's only recommended. You know, just say labbaik allahumma labbaik at least once. I mean, you want to say it, but you should say it more often. It's recommended to say it every... Where did they come up with all of those, you know, whenever he goes up and down and meets somebody and forgets something, and where did they come up with all of this? From reports from the Tabi'een about the Sahaba, there is nothing authentically traceable to the Prophet ﷺ, except that the Prophet ﷺ said, كأني أنظر إليه إلى موسى إذا حضر إلى الوادي لب أو يلبي إذا حضر إلى الوادي. As if I see Musa coming down to the valley making talbiyah. So that is the only thing that's traceable to the Prophet ﷺ. But all of the other ones, they were recommended by the scholars because they were recommended by one or more sahabas. Therefore, these are traceable to a sahaba, and some of the older tabi'een traced them to the sahaba. Ibrahim al-Nakhai said, كانوا يستحبون التلبية إذا such and such and such. They used to like to make talbiyah whenever they did one of these things, or encountered one of these things. So that's it with the talbiyah, and that's it with the chapter on ihram. I will stop for 5 minutes here to allow people to leave, those who want to leave, and then we will take your questions, inshallah.